Well, there has been a serious war going on. For some of us think it's just been 2 years. No, the war between Russia and Ukraine, it's coming on 10 years. And my next guest believes that the West cannot afford to allow Russia to win this one. I want to introduce my guest, George Monasteriakos, adjunct professor of law at the University of Ottawa. Professor Monasteriakos, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me, Angela.
And I know a lot of people say, gosh, we're coming up to the second anniversary of Russia invading Ukraine, but we forget that we have to go back almost 10 years when we saw what happened in Crimea. Remind my listeners really how long this conflict's been going on.
So the conflict started more or less in 2014, following the Maidan Revolution. Russia invaded Crimea with its little green men and then Russian separatists, or quote-unquote Russian separatists, in the easternmost oblasts or provinces of Ukraine, which are Donetsk and Luhansk, began this, I guess you could say, civil war. And here we are today, approaching the 10-year anniversary.
Yeah, and I know we have focused a lot on the more recent one that began, well, 22 months ago. In the early stages of it, George, we did see a lot of support from the West. What has happened since then that it almost seems as if, you know, whether we're looking at the United States, who are having this huge debate over whether or not more funding should go to Ukraine, what has shifted in the last number of months?
So in the United States specifically, I think that you have more or less unanimous support within the Democratic Party, in the White House as well. However, the Republican Party seems to be split between, I want to call them the isolationist bloc, and the more practical side, which wants to tie aid to Ukraine to the White House and, I guess, Congress, finalizing some kind of deal or compromise on the border crisis in the South. They want to use it. They want to basically use that as leverage to advance that specific interest and defend the American border. In Europe, it's a little bit of a different problem. They have this one state, Hungary, which has blocked EU financial assistance to Ukraine for months on end now. Today, the EU announced that they would be willing to sanction Prime Minister Viktor Orban if he fails to unblock or unveto this this aid. They could suspend his voting rights through Article 7 of the Treaty of the European Union and a bunch of other sanctions. So I think that's part of the problem. Another issue that's dawning on people now, specifically in the West, is the counteroffensive that was oversold and underdelivered.
And get into, George, explain that more, though, that counteroffensive that was oversold and underdelivered.
So, I mean, we had this counteroffensive, and it was sold as this was going to be the counteroffensive to kind of, I don't want to say to replicate the success of last November when Ukraine basically liberated swaths of territory through in the Kharkiv and Kherson oblasts. And we believed, or analysts believe, or the media sold this counteroffensive where NATO was going to provide all these tanks and they trained 40,000 soldiers to participate in this counteroffensive to go and break the Russian lines. And, I mean, they didn't have the success that they expected. And so now people are thinking back and they're saying, look, how much more money do we have to sink into this? And this is a legitimate concern. I'm not trying to discount that. However, I do think that the alternative of allowing Russia to just to fight this battle out and basically wait the West out, essentially, it would be terrible. It will be terrible.
And I think, obviously, money talks. And as much as the West in the early days came out united with Ukraine, we quickly saw that there was such ties between Russia and the West that suddenly people and those governments, those countries, became less supportive. Can you talk about some of the things that were going on behind the scenes, really, that led to the Ukraine actually losing support as opposed to the West giving them more financial aid?
So I think if we go back 10 years now, we see a more or less a history of, I don't want to oversimplify, but we see this history of appeasement that resembles the French and British policy of the 1930s with Hitler. So Russia had spent 30, 40, 50 years developing this energy market in Europe, selling gas. It started with the Brotherhood pipeline, and then it expanded to Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2. And these pipelines, which is basically the EU paying really getting bargain prices on gas in exchange for looking the other way when Russia was pursuing this aggressive foreign policy. 2008, they invaded Georgia. 2014, Ukraine. And then second time in 2022. I think in 2022, you had the West shift away. But just because they started looking for alternatives, whether it be Azerbaijan or Algeria or Qatar, and now even the East Med pipeline, and this is regarding gas specifically, there's also been this secondary market that is formed in the European Union, where you have law firms and financial institutions that help Russia evade sanctions. So whether it be banks in Austria or lawyers in Cyprus, as we've seen with the recent Cyprus confidential files. It's a really, really complicated subject. I still think that the West is behind Ukraine, but again, they're getting cold feet. Do we want to be all in? Do we want to push Ukraine to just settle? And the problem with just telling Ukraine to call it quits, I think there's at least two issues with that. And the one is that the current Ukrainian state with these lines of control is not viable. The threat to the port of Odessa, for example, is enormous. And just like there's no natural geographic boundaries between Russia and Ukraine other than maybe the Black Sea and the Dnipro River. And then lastly, it's that Russia's word doesn't really mean anything. They've made all kinds of deals with the West, with Ukraine, since 1991 independence. And they've more or less violated each and every single one of them. And so I think the West has to be in this for the long haul, because the Ukrainian people clearly are. Recent poll conducted by the Kyiv Institute of Kyiv University actually indicates this, that upwards of 80% of Ukrainians want to keep the war effort going. They don't want to make any concessions to Russia. And so they're the ones that are paying the price. They're the ones that are fighting the war. All we have to do is help them.
My guest is George Monasteriakis, adjunct professor of law at the University of Ottawa, and he has written his column in thenationalpost.com. I encourage you to check it out. But one of the lines out of that, George, is the global balance of power, which favors the West, is unlikely to last forever, especially if we continue appeasing evil. And that's what you say we're seeing right now with the situation between Russia and Ukraine.
Absolutely. I think, and I don't just think that you see it playing out between Russia and Ukraine. I think you see it playing out between Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Hezbollah, and Israel, and I mean Iran, if you want to throw them into the equation. I think you also see it with the Houthis getting excited now and basically blockading maritime traffic through the Red Sea, whereby up to 10% of global oil supplies have to go through and travel up the the Red Sea and through the Suez Canal. And then you have other issues like Venezuela getting excited and somehow trying to reverse a status quo that was imposed or agreed upon, rather, in the 1899 arbitral award, whereby they want to annex 70% of Guyana's territory. And so these crises that we see are going to keep multiplying because this thuggish mentality of might makes right will be emboldened by how the West responds to Russia's aggression in Ukraine. And it's very difficult to try to connect all these dots because we're overwhelmed with information, but this is what is happening, and the evidence, the proof, is in the pudding.
In the early stages of, well, this most recent invasion, Russia into Ukraine, there was a lot of calls for the West to actually put boots on the ground. But there was this concern from NATO, United Nations, that then we're going to have all-out war. What is the solution then to be able to send the right message to not just Russia, but those other countries that you're pointing out and those other organizations?
So I do think that, I don't think that NATO should send boots on the ground to Ukraine. I've been very clear on the record about this. I do think that they missed an opportunity at the beginning of the war to impose a no-fly zone over the Ukrainian skies. They missed that opportunity, whether right or wrong, I mean, up to debate. That being said, I think that they need General Valery Zaluzhny, in an article for The Economist last month, actually, he mentioned specifically what Ukraine needs to break this state of what he calls positional warfare, and it including improving Ukraine's jamming technology, minesweepers, obviously F-16s, which Ukraine should be receiving in 2024. But I also think that the West has to increase its defense industrial base, because right now you have the United States shouldering the bulk of the burden in terms of military aid to Ukraine, whereas Europe, South Korea has provided more artillery shells than Europe, and they've become the second biggest, more or less the second biggest provider of ammunition after the United States, and we're talking 155 millimeter shells. So you need to have this awakening in the West to realize, like, we account for more than 50%, even more than 60% of global GDP. We have the state capacity. We have the financial resources to support Ukraine for this. We just need this concerted effort to say, we're going to do it. We're going to do it for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. We're going to have a plan. We're going to train the Ukrainians. We're going to give them the weapons that they ask for, that they need, to push the Russians back. And even if they don't reach the Russian border, even if they don't liberate all of Donetsk and Luhansk, all they have to do is cut down to the Sea of Azov and make the Crimean Peninsula untenable for Russia. And that will force Russia to negotiate on terms that are favorable to Ukraine. This is my own personal opinion.
Well, you know what? I'm glad we were able to just share your opinion, because we haven't been talking about it as much recently. So I'm glad we were able to do it with you. George, thanks so much for this.
Thank you for having me, Angela. Have an excellent day. And one more thing, Slava Ukraini.
Is that free Ukraine?
It means glory to Ukraine.
Thank you very much, George. George Monasteriakos, adjunct professor of law at the University of Ottawa.